Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got him on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a end zone punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. We're going to be with you for the next 2 hours as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. That's right. 2 hours. We're doubling the amount of time that we normally have here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. We got to get through one more day, Paul. One more day. And we finally will know who the Giants take in the first round.
I hardly got any sleep last night. And I'm not going to sleep tonight. And then I've got 3 more days of not getting much sleep, much like everybody upstairs here at the Giants facility. You know, everybody knows what's at stake. The Giants have 8 picks in these 7 rounds because they got the extra bonus pick. They traded McManus, the kicker, last year to the Broncos. So they got that extra one in the last round. Bottom line, folks, this is a really, really big draft for this team because, as we know, you know, they've got some holes to fill yet. And if they should do as well as they did last year and get 4 guys, let's just say 4 guys out of the 8, to produce some type of immediate dividends, you know, that's going to go a long way in terms of making the Giants a potential playoff team. A good draft like that, they don't come along every year. You know, we know that. But if the Giants can do something like that now in the next 3 days, it's going to be fun around here.
The results were very encouraging
from
last year's draft group. So if the Giants could duplicate that, which is obviously the goal, then that means that you're going to add some depth, you're going to add some playmakers in the mix, which is what their ultimate goal is each and every season. We're expected to hear from Rick Saratella of NFL Draft Bible a little bit later on in the program. We're also going to get to your phone calls, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also use hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. And we're going to have some fun with you today. Paul and I are going to open things up to you, the viewers, you, the listeners. You get to be the general manager today. We're going to take you through the first 9 picks of the draft, including the Giants selection. We're going to go one caller at a time. You are going to make the pick. So Tampa Bay is on the clock right now. The first caller we get to, you make the pick for the Bucs, and we'll continue to go down the line until we get to the Giants. This is your mock draft today. We're going to give it out to the fans. Then tomorrow, Paul and I will be back here again for you. 2 hours. Paul and I will do our own mock draft leading up to the Giants draft. He and I are going to list our top 9, and wherever we differ, we'll explain and so forth. But today, we want to make this program about you, the fans, as much as possible. So as I mentioned, the first 9 callers, you're going to be on the clock, and you're going to go team by team. Tampa Bay is on the clock right now.
And, of course, coming up after that, Tennessee and Jacksonville, the top 3. So get your pick ready. If you're not the first caller, you know you're going to be Tennessee coming up right after that. And we're going to leave the board open to you. I mean, you know, what are you going to do there? Are you going to take Winston? You're going to take Mariota? You're going to make a trade, perhaps?
That's right.
I mean, we'll leave the board open to you because we want to see exactly what you guys are thinking out there. And I'll tell you something, Lance. The more that I think about this and the closer we get to the draft, the more I believe there was going to be a flurry of activity in the top 10. I've been saying that now for the past month. I am more convinced than ever. Talked to a guy yesterday, very much plugged in with a lot of NFL teams, and he says calls are just going fast and furious. Even already now, there's a lot of buzz going on about people trying to move up and people trying to move down. And people who think they're about to get a phone call, but they're going to wait for that phone to ring because they're anticipating that it's coming. There's a lot of intrigue about the mobility of the teams in the top 10.
Well, and let's start there before we open it up to the phone lines about the storylines connected to some trades. Now, the team that seems to gauge the most interest at this point right now, Paul, is probably Tennessee at number 2, given the fact that if Winston does go number 1 to Tampa Bay, Marcus Mariota is going to be dangling out there. And if there's another team that wants a quarterback, perhaps they're dialing up Tennessee right now. The Titans, there's been rumors they're high on Zach Mettenberger, who they took out of LSU last year. He got banged up, but they called him, at least through an article, the poor man's Tom Brady. So it seems they're content with him. Now, does that mean that maybe they're going to now look to cash in, gain a few more picks, gain some talent? I think San Diego and Philadelphia, and I'll even throw in Cleveland, Paul, the 3 teams perhaps that would be interested to move up to grab a quarterback under those circumstances, at least.
Well, and you know what? There are some people who think the Jets might, too. I don't know if I agree with that, but there has been some talk that the Jets would really like to get their grips on Mariota as well. To do that, they'd only have to jump up from 8, which isn't that far as compared to, let's say, Philadelphia, who's got to really make up some real estate if they're going to get into that top 5 area. The question for me, Lance, and I'm going to ask you right now, do you have to be 2 to get Mariota? Or do you just have to be top 5? Because I'm not so sure that Tennessee takes him. I know Jacksonville's not going to take him. I know Blake Oakland's Morales, not going to take him. And I know Washington's not going to take him. At least I don't think so.
Well, they have a number of quarterbacks at this point.
So if you're the Jets at 6, do you even have to go up to 2 to get him if you really want him?
That's a fair question. If you look at the teams that are in the top 5, I would agree with you. I think for the most part, everybody at least has either a young quarterback or many question marks at quarterback, but they have so many guys financially on the books at this point, it may not make sense from a roster standpoint, from a financial standpoint, to invest in another young quarterback. You get to 6, that's where things start to get interesting with the Jets. After that, let's just go further down the line. The Bears right now are at least committed to Jay Cutler. I would be surprised if they went in the direction of drafting quarterback. And Atlanta just locked up Matt Ryan. And
sure.
Then we're getting to the Giants, who we know obviously have Eli Manning at this point. You're right. If he falls potentially, let's say you get to the Giants at number 9, and this is where things get interesting, Paul, even from the Giants' perspective. All of a sudden, the Giants now are at number 9. Mariota's still on the board. They could potentially be fielding calls right now at this point.
Well, I would think this. Philadelphia, in my mind, is going to make a very strong pitch to move up for Mariota. Now, I know they're talking about a lot of draft picks. It'll take at least 3, maybe even 4 draft picks, or maybe even 3 picks and a quarterback, or a conditional draft pick in there, depending upon how much Mariota winds up playing for them. There are a lot of different ways you could go with this, but I do believe that they are going to make an extremely concerted effort to try to trade up and get Mariota. Now, you just went through a litany of teams that probably won't take a QB. Any one of those teams would be a potential trading partner. Because if you're Philadelphia, you're not going to wait till 9 till the Giants come up on the board and say, well, let's make a deal because we want Mariota. Chances are, you might even go up to 7, where Chicago is. You might even go up to the Jets at 6. If the Jets are bluffing and they don't want Mariota, heck, I could see the Jets trading with Philadelphia and collecting a whole bunch of picks and saying, okay, you want Mariota? Go get him at 6. I don't think Philly's going to wait till 9 to make that move. I really don't.
It'd be risky to do that. I would agree with you. However, we've seen some interesting drafts where sometimes a player could fall and you didn't really have to give up all of your possessions to get there. But Philadelphia is not in a position where they can assume that somebody else wouldn't necessarily go above them and try to make a blockbuster deal. Because I'll even go past the Giants, Paul, at this point. If you look at some of the other teams even after New York, St. Louis just acquired Nick Foles. Yes, it'd be intriguing for them to grab a young quarterback, but I don't know if it's a big necessity right now. Minnesota's got Teddy Bridgewater, not a necessity. Cleveland hasn't worked out who its starting quarterback is, but then again, based on the numbers game, like Washington, has a number of options. The Saints, they're fine with Drew Brees. The Dolphins have Ryan Tannehill. Colin Kaepernick with San Francisco. The Texans, they have a few options at this point, not necessarily solidified their position. Perhaps, you know, they may look for a quarterback. San Diego, you get to now the whole Phillip Rivers situation. But, you know, you could say 16-17. He could potentially drop if nobody made a trade.
That won't happen.
Nothing else happened. I understand that's probably not going to happen. But
if he starts falling,
alone,
somebody's going up to get him.
And you would have to, because you can't take the chance that he's going to continue to fall. But you know, notice how we're not far away from Philadelphia when we're talking about potentially just based on need.
Right.
16-17 is where maybe you get to the point that actual teams need a quarterback.
Let me ask you a question about the Browns. They desperately need a receiver. They've got 2 number ones. And as far as I'm concerned, I wasn't big on Johnny Manziel coming out of school anyway. Would the Browns take Mariota?
Well, that's why I threw them out there. It wouldn't surprise me, Paul.
I mean, really?
It wouldn't surprise me, but from a numbers game, you just invested in a young quarterback, as you just alluded to. You brought in Josh McCown. Not a huge investment. And let's not forget, they also have Connor Shaw from South Carolina as well. Once again, I'm not saying these guys are answers, but you just threw out the Browns need a wide receiver. You could also make an argument that Cleveland needs a running back.
Badly.
Need some help with the offensive line.
Badly.
Defense is the strength of that team. Therefore, if you have other priorities and you have two first-round picks, wouldn't you address those other needs as opposed to reaching for another quarterback? I mean, that's the type of situation that I think could very well play out for them.
See, for me, I've been thinking all along that the Browns, because they got two first-rounders, they'd like to move up and maybe use one of those picks to maybe get Amari Cooper or Kevin White and try to get into the top five. That's kind of how I've seen the Browns to this point. But, I don't like the quarterbacks either. And in spite of the investment they've made in them, if they decide that those quarterbacks are not the guys, I don't know. There's so much intrigue. And I know we say that every year about the draft. You never know what's going to happen, and there are so many questions, and there are injury concerns, there are off-the-field concerns, there are guys with big contracts who may be on the way out. I mean, Philip Rivers is talking about how, you know, he may not want to move with the Chargers if the franchise relocates. And we also know he's going to want Big Ben money, too, because his deal's coming up, just like Eli's is. And Big Ben already set the table for that class of quarterbacks. So there's a lot of storylines going into this. But, again, my conviction, and let's get to our callers, yep. But my conviction, Lance, and it's a strong conviction, there's going to be movement up there, and it's going to be high. And it's going to really affect the rest of the dominoes on the board. And, of course, from the Giants' perspective, that's the only thing they care about.
Absolutely. They only care about the first eight picks. That's what makes the draft exciting. That's what makes it also stressful at the same time. Now we're going to give you the stress. We're going to give you the fun as we're going to start off our mock draft. And in addition to making the selection, obviously, if you have questions or comments on other things, we'll allow you to discuss that
as
well.
No doubt.
So let's open things up here at 201-939-4513. Vic is in Florida. He is on the clock. Tampa Bay. Vic, what's happening?
Tampa Bay, Jameis Winston.
Okay, I am jotting that down as we speak. Jameis Winston is off the board with the first overall pick. That means Tennessee's on the clock. Vic, before we let you go, anything else you have for us?
Yes.
What do you got?
Leonard Williams goes to the Titans, all right?
Well, we didn't want you to make every single pick, Vic.
You want all the picks, right?
Vic, we're going to cut you off at number one here. I meant, do you have anything else for us, meeting Giants related?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize.
It's okay. It's understandable.
This is a question that I have for Paul, because Paul and I don't agree too much on one thing. Now, last year, we had a big problem in stopping the run. Am I correct?
Yes. Up the middle, okay. In particular.
Okay. Now, my point is, I am for Scherf all the way. Number one, our number one pick, Scherf.
Okay.
But if he's not available,
right?
Why not go for a great run stopper like a Shelton? In a good pass rusher. That's my question. Why would you want to go with a corner in Trey Wayne?
Well, here's the thing. As far as that rush defense is concerned, I'm thinking that a return of John Beeson, albeit his injury history certainly makes that questionable, but Beeson coming back, I think, is a big help to that rush defense. I think the improvement of Hankins, who I could see this guy being a Pro Bowl player, if not this year, certainly next year. He's that good. So I think the improvement of him is a big factor. I think the addition of Kenrick Ellis, who is a plugger. They signed him from the Jets. He is a two-down, run-stuffing plugger at defensive tackle. I thought that was a really good signing because he's exactly the kind of guy they need. He's the Sean Rogers type when the Giants signed him a couple of years ago and expected him to be the stay-at-home guy just to help create traffic in there. I think he helps do that. They also got Jay Bromley, who we haven't seen anything of and have absolutely no idea what he can bring to the table. But since they did draft him in the third round out of Syracuse, and I know he's not a plugger, he's more of a three technique and a finesse guy and a penetrator. I get all of that. But that's another guy in the defensive tackle spot who I think that they're hoping to get reps out of. And don't forget, Colin Jenkins played banged up last year. I think we saw the year before. He's a good player. And last year he was hurt, and so I'm expecting him again to be healthy. So the Giants' defensive tackle spot combined with John Beeson's return and the full-time role of Devon Kennard in the linebacking corps, which will also help stop the run. I think the Giants' rush defense is going to be a lot better even before they add any additional players.
And, Vic, we got to let you go with that. We've got a guest on the line here, but appreciate the phone call. We'll continue our mock draft momentarily. So for those of you on the line, hang tight. But right now, as we mentioned off the top of the show, we're joined by Rick Serratella of NFL Draft Bible, kind enough to give us a few minutes as we get closer to the draft. Rick, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
I appreciate you guys having me back. Just touched down in Chicago out of the draft town, soaking it all in. The NFL did a wonderful job out here.
Very nice, Rick. So let's start with some stocks that tend to rise and fall as we get closer to the draft here. Who in your mind do you think has made the most of his potential, maybe in the last week or two from what you're hearing, that could potentially jump into the top 10 now?
Well, you know, this year's theme is going to be wide receivers. I think they're going to come off the board fast and furious early and often. And that means some of these guys going a little bit higher than we anticipated. Of course, Breshad Perriman. Here's a kid who had his pro day late in the season, late in the pro day circuit, burned it up. And now you're talking about a guy that's going to get top 16 consideration. Another guy, Nelson Agholor from USC. Here's a guy that was a borderline first round pick. I just did my latest mock draft, which I'll post tomorrow. I actually have him going at 16, so I think he can go in the top half of the first round. I think you see three wide receivers in the top eight and maybe seven or eight in the first round altogether. So I think the wide receivers are the ones moving up, fast risers.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe, as I do, that there's going to be as much activity in terms of the trade wins in the top 10, probably more than we've seen in recent years? And if there is one trade in the top 10 that you think will happen, which one do you think it would be?
Well, yeah, I think it starts off at number two with Marcus Mariota. He's going to be a hot commodity. Everybody needs a franchise quarterback. I think the Eagles, Browns, maybe the Chargers are looking to make a move up there. You're talking about Amari Cooper now, the wide receiver. Some talk the Falcons might want to move up for Amari Cooper. You remember a couple years back they made a power play, gave up a lot for Julio Jones. Worked out pretty well for them. I wouldn't be surprised if they move up for Amari Cooper.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I think the Falcons need defense, right?
If you look back on the last 5 years, guys, there's double-digit trades in the first round every year except for one. I think we might see a record this year. I think we might see 10, 15 trades in the first round.
Wow.
Wow. Now, let me ask you this. In terms of the quarterbacks, you know, you had mentioned that Tennessee could ship out that number two pick. What teams do you think would be at least in the running for that number two pick? Because you mentioned Atlanta could be in the business of a wide receiver, but what teams do you think at least would be at the top of the board to grab that number two selection?
Well, obviously you got the Cleveland Browns with two first-round picks could make a play there. I think Chip Kelly is going to do everything in his power to walk out of Chicago with Marcus Mariota as his quarterback. I think that's his ultimate goal, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see Sam Bradford and Mark Sanchez traded this weekend, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles package this year's first, next year's first round, maybe a possible three-way deal where Sam Bradford goes to the Browns, the Eagles move up to number two, the Titans slide back and accumulate a couple extra first-round picks. And Lord knows that team needs a lot of help. So I would imagine, you know, someone used the term, you know, they trade back and get a couple extra scratch-off tickets. I think the Titans need more players. And while I'm not the biggest Zach Mettenberger believer, if you can move back and acquire two or three additional first-round picks, that seems like the best move for the Titans.
You know, one of the things that bothers me, Rick, and I'm a traditional 4-3 guy like Spagnuolo is here with the Giants on defense. You've got a whole bunch of these edge pass rushers, but they're more of the tweener types, the 3-4 types, the smallest kind of edge guys, who, quite honestly, you don't know if these guys can even begin to play in coverage or to play in what would be a 4-3 scheme, because I think they're going to be too small if they try to play down with their hands in the dirt. How difficult has it been for you as a draft guru and as a guy who tries to handicap this thing to grade these particular players? Because, again, in the NFL, there are some teams that they're just not going to use that skill set properly, and therefore the value of that player is going to be significantly diminished.
It's very difficult to gauge, especially for a guy who's traditionally played with his hand in the dirt like a lot of these guys had. In college, they're looking to make a transition now. You talk about guys like Vic Beasley, 246, Randy Gregory, 237. A lot of these guys are under 250 pounds. I don't see a home for them as a 4-3 defensive end. So they're going to have to convert to that outside linebacker position where now you might be asking them to cover, you know, tight ends and running backs out of the backfield. Do we know if they know how to do that? That's a little bit of a transition. But these guys are young. A lot of these guys are bright. But also I have some concerns with a guy like a Randy Gregory who played his senior season at 217 pounds. I know he weighed 235 at the combine, but he packed on 20 pounds since the end of the season. How much more weight can this guy put on and still be fast and quick and effective at the next level? He might have maxed out at his weight. Vic Beasley came in at almost 250 pounds, which was actually surprising to scouts. He actually boosted his draft stock. But again, here's a guy who bulked on a lot of weight to impress NFL teams. You have to wonder about how much more they can max out their weight at the next level and still be speed and have that burst on the outside. So it's a lot that goes into the equation. And I think this year's pass rushers, especially when you factor in the equation, the character and off-the-field issues that these pass rushers have, I see a lot of them doing a slip and slide potentially out of the first round.
You know, we all talk about how Mike Mamula was the ultimate poster boy for the workout warrior and the combine player who wound up failing. You know, I wonder, Rick, also, when you look at these things and you start compiling your grades and your equations about how much you weigh your game tape from what you saw last fall and last winter to the guys who wound up kicking butt at the combine. You just mentioned a couple of guys who came in with very surprising combine numbers, whether it was their weight. There are other guys who blew away the 40 with their speed in the combine. Suddenly you hear people saying, well, the guy's jumping 15 spots in the draft, but you know what? You didn't see them play with those numbers. And
right.
And so aren't those things artificial? And how much do you grade that when you take your picks into account?
You know, the best instinct is always your gut instinct, and you got to go by what you watch. The combine is good for measurables when, you know, this is how I use the combine as a tool. I've been covering the NFL draft for 14 years. So when I look at a certain position, I have a marker in my head. If a player hits a certain height, weight, and 40 time at a certain position, I could get a good idea where that draft stock is going to be for that individual player. So I think over the course of time, just by looking at the measurables, every year these players are getting bigger, stronger, faster. And you talked about Mike Mamula. You know, I had a conversation with Jay Fiedler about this a couple weeks ago when he was with the Eagles. You know, his second season, they drafted Mike Mamula. And he was the first guy that really took this combine training to the next level.
Right.
He was the first guy doing these drills and these tests to improve the measurables. And we've seen the last 20 years now, it's become a niche market where all these training facilities are pumping these guys' times up. And it is a little bit of artificial inflation. And you look at a kid, you know, like Byron Jones. I just spoke to him here at UConn, completely off the NFL radar, comes into Indy,
exactly.
Blows it up, set the record, and now you got to go back to the tape and see, does he play that speed? I don't think so.
Right.
Talking with Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible. Rick, a moment ago, Paul was talking about all of those defensive tweeners, and obviously the players that go before the Giants take at number 9 are going to impact who's left for the Giants at number 9. Of those defensive betweener type of players, how many do you think are going to be off the board by the time the Giants select at number 9? I'm talking about the Fowlers, the Duprees, and so forth.
Well, you know, to me, I actually have Dante Fowler rated as the number 1 player overall in the draft. Wouldn't surprise me if he goes number 3 overall and not Leonard Williams, but I think Fowler's definitely off the board. However, these other guys, Vic Beasley, Randy Gregory, are definitely going to be there. And I think Shane Ray has done enough to maybe now take himself out of the first round equation altogether. The Giants might be looking at Shane Ray on the board when they come around in the second round. So I think if they want to get a pass rusher in this draft at that first pick, they can certainly do so. I just don't think these guys fit the criteria in terms of what the Giants are looking for with their overall organization game plan.
All right, Rick, let me ask you this. There's the assumption here by looking at the Giants depth chart. They need help along the offensive line, and they certainly need help at free safety. Those would be two of the glaring positions that they'd like to get some depth at. So in your mind, let's just say the Giants don't get one of those two positions in the first round. Let's say they wind up with Amari Cooper. Somebody drops and they go off the board. They get the best player available. And those two needs still exist going into rounds 2 and 3. What safeties or offensive linemen would you have on your radar if you were the Giants in rounds 2 and 3?
Well, rounds 2 and 3, I'm looking at a guy, the upstart from Hobart, Ali Marpet. I think this guy really proved not only at the scout, the Senior Bowl, but also at the scouting combine that he belongs with the premier prospects at the offensive line position. So I think Ali Marpet is a guy that I would definitely target. Talk about TJ Clemmings, a kid from New Jersey, played ball up in Pittsburgh. Raw kid, probably going to go in the second round, but there's a lot to work with here. I think NFL teams are going to see a lump of clay that they can really form and mold, and he has all the skills, all the tools. He did not even play football until his junior year of high school, went to Pittsburgh as a defensive player. So you're talking about raw skill but huge upside with T.J. Clemmings of Pittsburgh. Over at cornerback, I believe you said, correct?
Safety, Rick.
Safety. Okay, let's talk safeties. You know, Demarius Randall is going to be the first safety off the board, I believe. Landon Collins maybe comes off early second round. After that, you're looking at guys like a Darren Smith from Fresno State. I like the kid Jaquiski Tartt from Stanford. I don't think he's an immediate plug-and-play starter, but I think a small school guy, he gets with the Giants the right kind of program. He's a Louis Delmas kind of guy up in the box that can come up, play tackle. So Jaquiski Tartt should definitely be on the radar. And, you know, I mentioned Byron Jones. I think he could go in the first. He could also be there in the second round. And I like the fact that with a guy like Byron Jones and Eric Rowe from Utah, they're big-bodied cornerbacks, 6 foot, 6 foot one. But if they don't work out a cornerback, almost like McCourty did off to New England, they could slide over to that safety spot and be a big value there.
And that is something that the Giants have even discussed in terms of corners currently on the roster. So you can certainly maybe see some young prospects being moved as well. Paul mentioned the offensive line, and that obviously is another area where perhaps the Giants would want to build some depth through the draft. If, let's say, they don't go after a Brandon Sheriff at number 9 or an Andrus Pete, for example, Rick, how much depth is there at the offensive line in this draft where perhaps you wait till round 2, you wait till round 3, you can walk away with a quality player who could potentially be a backup or very well a starter?
You know, I think you can get into the third and fourth rounds, and I look at the offensive line prospects. I don't see them being too top-heavy. I think you get maybe one guy in the top 12 off the board, maybe two, and maybe four offensive tackles in the first round. So I think there's going to be depth in there in the second round, in the third round, maybe even in the fourth round. I heard you mention Jay Bromley from Syracuse. They got an offensive lineman up there at Syracuse who's a four-year starter, played left tackle, might kick inside and play some guard. I think his name is Hickey. His name is slipping off the tongue here. But,
no, you're right. Justin Pugh's a big fan of his.
He was promoting him the other day.
At the presser, yes.
Yes. I like this kid. I like what he brings to the table. I take into account one thing I really do appreciate with the transition at the next level. Anytime you can get a 3 or 4 year starter, a team captain, I think there's a lot of value there. And, you know, he's getting actually criticized for having short arms. So I think he's probably going to kick inside at the next level. But I think here's a guy, you get him in the third or fourth round, and you have him compete for a starting job in training camp, and he has the talent to emerge as a starter for sure.
Rick Cervitello from the NFL Draft Bible with us. I know you got to go, Rick, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. But I do want to ask you about Brandon Sheriff out of Iowa, who I think you alluded to before when you said there's one offensive lineman in the top 12 of the draft. Everyone seems to think he's the consensus number one. But where there's not a consensus is, where do you think he fits in the pro game? I'm in the camp that says I think he can be a terrific right tackle in the NFL. There are others who think, you know what, he's going to be much better off at guard, and you really don't want him to play tackle. What do you see?
I see a guy that can do it all, and I just spoke to Brandon Scherff. This kid is a complete team player. He doesn't care where he lines up. He just wants to get on the field and hit somebody. But when you study him, he's a well-rounded talent. And, you know, there were big expectations coming into the season with Brandon Scherff. A lot of people felt he could have been in the top 10 last season. He stayed in school, gave up 2.5 sacks this past year. Maybe his film wasn't what people were expecting, but this kid is polished. He's a technician, he's a bully, and he can do anything you ask. I would be comfortable with having him start at right tackle with the upside to even play left tackle. I think he can do it, and I think there's no doubt in my mind whether he plays guard or tackle, this guy's going to play in the league a very long time. Whoever gets him has a starter for the next decade if he stays healthy.
Rick, before we let you go, obviously you need an offensive line to help get the running game going to protect the quarterback, and that is an area that the Giants certainly going to look to improve heading into this season. One running back in particular that I have read an awful lot about over the last few days that is slowly moving up the boards is Todd Gurley, who got hurt in college last year. What have you been hearing about him, and how high could he potentially go, and how much do you think he could potentially shake up round one?
You know, I'm not buying it, guys. I just don't see the value of an injured running back. I've seen him as high as number 6 to the Jets, and it seems silly to me personally. I know the talk is out there, but I'm in the boat where I got to see it to believe it, because for me, I don't value running backs in the first round. I don't see a franchise running back like Adrian Peterson being a franchise difference maker where you're an instant contender or a running back is going to carry you to the Super Bowl. The last time that happened was maybe Jamal Lewis and Terrell Davis. It's a new game. It's a spread-out game. I wouldn't use a first-round pick on a running back. I think Melvin Gordon is going to come off the board before Todd Gurley. I could see the Dolphins taking a running back. I believe they're at number 14. So for me, I think the Marcus Lattimore's injury is fresh in my mind. I saw how that worked out with
sure.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Sure.
And I know his injury is similar to Adrian Peterson. But listen, not everybody's Adrian Peterson. For me, a first-round investment, I want a guy who's going to come in and start right away. I don't want to have to worry about if he's going to redshirt, especially at a position where I can get a mid-round guy, a late-round guy, an undrafted guy to come in and start. So many teams use a committee by running back. I don't see Todd Gurley going in the top 16. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I could certainly understand that, Rick. All right, well, final question for me. As you look at the top 10, we know about the Giants being number 9. You said, as well as I, that there's probably going to be a lot of trade activity up there. From where the Giants stand at 9, on the basis of the elite players that you think may go before them, do you suspect there's much of a chance that they'll move, or do you really think, if you had to make a bet, that they're going to take a pick at 9?
You know, it's a weird draft because, you know, when I did my grades, I had about 20 players that had first-round grades in this draft. So
right.
It's not really strong at the top in terms of star power. I think, unfortunately for the Giants, every team wants to move down. but there's got to be a commodity there for a team that wants to move up. And I think when you talk about the guys that we discussed, the Mariota, the Amari Cooper, even a Dante Fowler, those are the three guys that I think teams would target to trade up. And I think all three of them should be off the board by the time the Giants come around. So, you know, every team wants to trade back, but the reality is it's hard to find a match, especially when you're sliding down in that position. And, you know, who knows? The wide receivers could be the X factor here, because I think if a team is waiting for the second round to get a guy because they believe the wide receiver, and it's deep. It's depth. I mean, I counted 10, 15 guys that I think are going to come in and make an impact in this league one day. But I think if you wait around for the second round, you might be out of luck. So if they do trade back, I think it'll be a team maybe trading up for a Devontae Parker, maybe a Kevin White, if he slides. If there's one of those two wide receivers on the board, then there's a shot for the Giants to possibly move down.
Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible. Rick, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you so
much. Thank you,
Rick. Appreciate it. You got it.
Rick, live from Chicago, gearing up for the draft, certainly providing some intel in terms of what may happen in round one or perhaps in the later rounds. And speaking of the draft, this is from ESPN. They are now reporting that the Browns have offered 2 first-round picks to Tennessee for the number 2 overall selection, where they would plan to take Marcus Mariota.
Wow. So We told you the phones would be burning up hot and heavy and that they had already started to rumble. Well, that is indeed the case. Mettenberger, who had a pretty decent grade on him last year, is the guy in Tennessee. You just heard Rick say that he's not the biggest fan of his, but he thinks he could survive down there if the Titans were able to get a boatload of picks and build around him. That's not a bad way to go, but this right here, two number ones, that's tempting. That's tempting.
Now, I wonder, is it the two number ones that they have this year, or is it a one from this year and then a one from another upcoming year? It could potentially be that, because the Browns have 12 and 19.
Yes.
They could give Tennessee both of those picks to move up to number two, or they may give them, let's say, 12 and then something from 2016.
I was thinking it was probably the two this year, flop to two.
And that
was my interpretation. I could be wrong. That's why I'm saying, wow, that's quite a bit. But then again, you know, what I was told is, like, if Chip Kelly wanted to move up, but he's in Philly, he's got a longer way to go now. Okay, in fact, his number is, where's Chip? Chip is at number 20.
20, yeah.
If Chip wanted to move up, I was told it would take three picks, a one, a second one, another one next year. Okay, his one this year, his one next year, his two next year, his three the year after that, and probably even a little more. So, guess what? Chip, the price has been set. It's time for you to put your chips into the middle of the table.
Well, and that's why you also need to put a story like this in perspective. Not saying there's no validity behind it, but Tennessee also, I'm sure, is dangling things out there, Paul, so that Philly and Chip Kelly, look, if they're interested, get now all of a sudden a little nervous.
And you know how I feel about Winston. I'm not a Winston guy, and if I were Tampa Bay, I would do everything I possibly could to bluff my way through this thing and then trade that pick for as much as I could get my hands on. I would not touch Jameis Winston with a 50-foot pole for a variety of reasons, But that's just me.
Well, speaking of Tennessee, Tennessee is on the board right now in terms of our mock draft. So it is time for us to continue our mock draft. Just to review, and we appreciate everybody holding tight while we had Rick Saratella on the line. Jameis Winston, Vic in Florida, took him off the board for Tampa Bay, number one overall.
He should have traded the pick.
He could have traded. Now, up next, though, this gentleman could very well trade the pick as well. We go to Greg, who is in Georgia. Greg, what's happening?
How you doing, man?
Doing well, Greg. What's happening?
All right. I just have a couple of things. First, with the mock draft thing, I really hate to pick on other teams because I'm such a diehard Giant. But I think Tennessee should take, if it's true, Tennessee should take the two picks and trade back and let the Browns go ahead and try to get Mariota if that's what they decide to do. I just want to shake things up a little bit with this draft. A couple of things. I hear everybody's big on Scherf. If Scherf can come in and help the run game, I'm all for that. But I really don't think that's what our pick should be. We have such a valuable pick at number nine. The Giants rarely get there because we're always an 8-8 or better team. We need to take advantage of the pick this year. I wouldn't trade down. And I would go after people that star, that can make an immediate impact in our thing. So I would get Amari Cooper if he's available. They say we have two receivers, but Victor Cruz is coming off injury. So I would plug in Amari Cooper. He can come in and play. Another thing, they're talking about these tweener guys. Man, Vic Beasley, the other guy, the two that's having the problems.
Randy Gregory.
With the, yeah,
Shane
Gregory
Ray, you're
and the other
yeah.
guy, and Ray. Man, we, the Giants, have not addressed linebacker since Lawrence Taylor. We haven't had a great line. We have good, decent pairs and all those guys.
Carl Banks, Pepper Johnson, Jesse Armstead.
From that era were great. What I'm talking about is we have a tween.
Antonio Pierce was pretty good.
That can definitely play outside linebacker behind our pass rushers. We have been addressing our linebacker needs through free agency recently.
Well, Devon Kennard, in fairness, though, Greg, yeah. and I understand your point, that I'm not saying that you're misleading and you're off balance in terms of that take. You're right. It's been quite some time since the Giants have taken a linebacker in the first round. That's documented. Mm-hmm. But to say that they haven't gotten some value out of the draft with that position, a little misleading, because Kennard, who can play the outside linebacker position and can help the pass rush, I think fits the bill that you're looking for right now.
He's a good player.
So he's going to start this year?
Sure.
Absolutely. Very much in the mix.
And what about Jaquan Williams? What do you guys think about him?
Jaquan Williams spent the last half of last season with a concussion and, to my knowledge, hasn't signed anywhere. He's an unrestricted free agent. And I have not been in touch with him at all since the season ended, so I don't know what his status is. But here's what I would tell you. In terms of pure 4-3 outside linebackers in this draft, it's not real strong, you know? A lot of the outside linebackers you're hearing about up in the first two rounds, these guys are those tweeners we're talking about. And they're better for 3-4 than they are for a 4-3 scenario. So this is not – if you want to get on the Giants got to draft a linebacker high sing-a-song kind of thing, this is not the draft to do it.
And, Greg, piggybacking off of Paul's point, that's when you get into the position where you're so focused on need that you just take a player for the sake of taking a player.
That's a bad thing to
do. Who may not be an ideal fit for the scheme. And that's why you hear the Giants and Jerry Reese always say, best player available. It's not the biggest need. It's not the best fit for the scheme. Best upside, best player
available. Just to finish, and again, I don't want to belabor the point too long, but the game has changed since the days when Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks and Harry Carson and those guys played. Because now, more than ever, you have situational substitutions where teams are going with what they call the big nickel or the three-headed safety package. And so you have, in often situations, only one linebacker who's staying on the field for all three downs. In a lot of cases, you have one and two guys who are only first and second down backers. And so the role of the linebacker has been much, much diminished in this era of NFL football. So I could understand not necessarily putting a high, high, high premium on that spot when safety now has become a little bit more important in recent years.
A lot of teams like to stretch out with the wide receivers. Greg, before we let you go, just for clarification for our mock draft, did you say Tennessee's going to trade the pick? Is that the point you're making?
Yeah, they should trade the
pick.
Well,
but is that they what should. You, for the sake of our mock draft,
is
though,
that your pick?
Is that what you want to do, though?
Yeah,
do you want
that's
to trade?
My pick.
So,
yeah,
so you want to trade it to
the,
who you're trading it to?
One quick thing before I go.
Yes.
I think Nate Behar is a good safety. I hope he translates well to the NFL. And this is just my opinion, we will regret it if we don't somehow get Dante Fowler, or if with the Rays and the Gregory's fall to the second round, pick up one of those guys. And we never saw them in pass coverage. But, hey, you got to give somebody a chance. Just like we're trying to give Scherf a chance at right tackle. I think those guys are deserving of a chance also.
Thank you for your call. Appreciate
it. Besides their off-the-field issues.
Thank you.
All right, Greg, appreciate the phone call.
Sheriff has played tackle, although the other side, there's a little difference between someone who has played left or right compared to someone who has never played linebacker before and has no idea what it's about in terms of lateral and backpedaling, trying to cover guys coming off the line of scrimmage. That's a big, big difference. Quite a jump, you know, in terms of asking these guys who played with their hands in the dirt to suddenly now be able to cover. You know, you got zone responsibilities, you got man responsibilities. It's a big, big difference.
Now, Greg was not very anxious to make a pick. He said it was going to be traded.
He traded it out.
We never got a player, though. I mean, the whole point is you got to make the trade and get a player. So
look, if he wants to trade out there, we're going to assume he's trading out there because the team that's going up to two is going to take Mariota.
So we're taking Mariota.
We're going to put Mariota in that spot.
Okay.
It's not a team. It's a spot.
Well, I thought the whole point of this was the fans to say it, not you.
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, I was going to have Tennessee back on the clock. That's what I was going to do.
Oh, you want to do
that's
that?
That's what I was going to do. Well, we'll see where Allen in Florida wants to go.
Allen,
we'll
if you want to make a pick for the second pick in the draft, you're welcome to do it.
Allen, what's happening?
But then you got to pick for the Jaguars, too.
Well, listen, I want to trade the pick for Paul Dottino. Let's get Paul Dottino out to Tennessee, and then we'll take whoever their guy is.
Oh, look at this. All right.
Wow. I'm glad to be worth the number two overall pick in the draft. I mean, I consider that a compliment.
He can sleep well at night knowing that now.
I think as you know, me, if I'm in Tennessee, I don't know who this kid traded. I don't think he wanted to make a pick. If I had the second pick, I would take Leonard Williams, like you guys said.
Fair enough.
I would just take Leonard Williams. I wouldn't bother trading or trying to get things complicated. I think Leonard Williams, and if you have a really solid defensive guy up front, I really think that that's going to make a difference for you. I mean, you know, the old adage, defense wins championships. We've seen some teams kind of can get to that that level without an elite quarterback. And we don't know where Mariota is yet with that. So if it was me, I'm taking a defensive guy. I'm taking Leonard Williams.
All right, so Leonard Williams off the board at number two. Aside from the mock draft, what else do you have for us, Alan?
I just think that for us as the Giants, I really like if he's there. Same thing with Leonard Williams. I really like the Danny Shelton kid. I think the guy from Draft Bible made a great point that I think a lot of people are going to miss that, you know, a lot of these guys are small. And he's right. You know, you put on the 20 pounds, you put on the 30 pounds of muscle, and it's going to be hard for these guys to keep that same pace. And one thing I've always wondered is when we do these workouts and these drills, it's like, yeah, it's nice to run in tight shorts and a tank top, but, you know, how are you going to move around with the helmet and the gear on? And I just think a guy like Shelton, that relates. That's a Vince Wolf or a Haloti, not a kind of big guy in the middle. Even though we play a 4-3, I still think that a big middle defensive tackle like him or nose tackle, however he translates, I would really like him at nine.
All right. Well, appreciate the phone call, Alan. Thanks so much for weighing in. And Danny Shelton, the defensive tackle out of Washington, who could project to a 3-4 nose tackle, as we were talking off the air before we came on the show. He's been really everywhere in mock drafts, at least I've viewed, Paul. I've seen him high, I've seen him middle, I've seen him low, really all across the board.
Yeah, you know, that's the other thing that's really wild about this, is that you get guys like Dupree, Shelton, let me think who else. Well, for a while, Landon Collins. Some people for a while had Landon Collins going top 10, maybe even a Giants selection. And now people are kind of settling down on that and realizing that he'd be better off at much lower in the first round, if at all. But, yeah, it's interesting how there's almost a disparity, if you will, or a range of 10 to 12 to 15 selections on some of these guys. And trust me, there's a big difference in terms of contract and in terms of gamble and risk-reward taking a guy as high as 10 or a guy as low as 25. I mean, you know, you better be darn sure if you're picking in the top 10. As Jerry Reese has said himself, you know, you're picking that high, you got to have conviction about a guy and that he's going to come in right away and he's going to give you something immediately. You know, you need to know that. At 25, even though it's the first round, there's a little bit more give, a little bit more leeway there.
A little
there.
Bit more risk there.
But you know, for a number of these guys, and you've mentioned a few of them, and I even think the Louisville receiver.
Parker
is another guy who I've seen quite a wide range on. And now with the off-the-field stuff, you've got some other players who suddenly
fall,
look like they could be dropping 10 to 12 to 15 picks. Wow. It's crazy.
Well, and I think it also depends on, for example, you brought up wide receiver, Paul, Amari Cooper and Kevin White. If they get taken in the top five, then if there's a team all of a sudden in that 11-12 range that really wants a wide receiver.
Do you move up to get Parker?
That could potentially be in play, or the team that's there right now could very well just grab him.
And then, as we talked about with Rick Seracella of the NFL Draft Bible, you've got these guys who are shooting up out of nowhere because they're working out really, really well. And Perriman is suddenly a guy who you're hearing about in, like, mid to early first round range. And he wasn't supposed to be anywhere near there.
And the other guy that he threw out was Byron Jones, the corner from UConn. All of a sudden, had great combine numbers. But since then, he's also been building up steam. And as I threw out to him, I don't know if you saw, there's been a lot of stories out there today, yesterday, Todd Gurley all of a sudden could potentially go really high. There was a report, I think, from NFL Network. Ian Rappaport said that there's one NFL team that has Todd Gurley as the number one guy on their draft board.
I find that so hard to believe. The running back position in this league, while I am still an old-school guy and I believe in the power of running game as being a big part of what you need to do to win, at the same time, the pounding that these running backs are taking in this game now, as opposed to even 10 or 15 years ago, make it very risky for me. There's got to be a yellow flag on any running back being taken, you know, in the top 10, top 15, who has somewhat of an injury history. I mean, you are really, you're really kind of clenching your teeth on that one and saying, well, we kind of hope it's going to be okay. Do you really want to do that?
It gets back to your point that you brought up. You have a top 10 pick, Paul. You want check mark, check mark, check mark. You
conviction.
Don't want a couple of question marks.
Conviction.
Absolutely.
I know this guy can do this. Not I hope. Not I want. Not I think. I know. Big difference.
Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Wednesday's edition. So glad you could join us as we get you set for the 2015 NFL Draft. We are doing our own mock draft right now, in case you're just joining us, where you, the caller, makes the pick for us. We have Jameis Winston going number one to the Bucs, Leonard Williams number two to Tennessee. So Jacksonville is up next. We head back to the lines. Chris is in New Jersey. Chris, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Chris.
Is number three up or number four up?
Number three. We went back to Tennessee because Greg in Georgia traded it, but he didn't necessarily name a player. And then we had Paul Dottino as part of the deal. So you're on the board for number three. Yeah.
My God.
Would you trade me for the second overall pick? I don't know about that. Go ahead.
All right. Here's the deal. I like your number. If it's number three spot, I got to go with
Jaguars.
I think it's Winston, Mariota, and I think it's going to be Williams.
Well, wait. Hold on. You're not listening here, Chris. You're killing us. All right. Winston went number one. Leonard Williams went number two. So Mariota is still on the board, as well as everybody else.
It's going to be Fowler.
Jaguars take Fowler.
There we go.
Fowler not a problem.
To the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And that's a good pick.
Yeah. And I just have one comment about the Giants, basically.
Sure. What do you have, Chris? We lost Chris.
Is he gone? Oh, cell phone bad. Bum deal.
Well, Chris does take Dante Fowler, so at least we got the pick out of him.
And you know, this is why, okay, everybody in the draft room in Chicago who's fielding calls from their team headquarters is going to be on a hard line. There will not be any cell phone communications going back and forth between
the transitions on this program. We have to work at all the elements of this show so Paul can relate it somehow to the NFL draft. So there you go. Everyone in the war room will have a hard line. We are happy to hear that. We don't have to worry about your cell phone reception and so forth. Moving along here at 201-939-4513.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
We want him. We want him. Hello? Minnesota Vikings, remember?
Correct,
twice, yes. They passed up picks.
The last thing you want to do is have your turn skip. No, you don't want to necessarily get to that point when you have a top 10 overall pick. Let's hope that Eddie in North Carolina has a workable phone as we welcome him into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Eddie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Not
good
a problem,
to talk
Eddie.
To you.
So who are you making the pick for here?
A lot of good stuff going on the last couple of days.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Very busy. So, Eddie, do you want to make a pick for us?
First thing, Oakland's on the board.
Yes, the Raiders are up.
All right, I'm taking the wide receiver, Cooper.
Okay, Amari Cooper. There you go. Amari Cooper to the Raiders at number four. So we've had a few defensive players, a quarterback, and now a wide receiver.
And Derek Carr just gave you a standing ovation.
He needs a target.
All right,
he's content.
On to the Giants. I hear a lot of talk about the offensive line. Me personally, with the draft, you know, there's no right or wrong. Everybody's opinion is valid. But the only way I pick an offensive lineman if I'm the Giants is if they decide that Beedy is not their left tackle of the future. Otherwise, I don't see them moving Pugh to guard, because if they were going to do that, I don't think they would have signed Jerry Reynolds and this kid from Canada, Jones. Plus, I don't think they want to pay a tackle money playing guard. That's number one. They need to fix the problem of stopping the run. That was their biggest problem last year. If they don't fix the problem of stopping up the run, it doesn't matter who's blocking to Eli, and he's going to be standing on the sideline because he's not going to be on the field.
Well, but let's go back to what Paul mentioned earlier, speaking of defensive lineman, defensive tackle, which is what you're alluding to. Let's play the numbers game right now, because I think it's fair to say, based on the numbers game right now, you have a number of players that are going to be fighting for roster spots as it is, that if you now bring in a rookie, you're just adding to a plethora of options at this point. I mean, look at the defensive ends. You've got Ayers, you've got Moore, you've got Selvey, you've got Stanton, you've got Wynn. At defensive tackle, you have Bromley.
You forgot JPP.
JPP, of course. I didn't name him. I'm removing the obvious. Bromley, Ellis, Hamilton, Hankins, Jenkins, Kuhn at defensive tackle. I named you well over 10, and if you play the numbers game, you'll be lucky if you keep 10 defensive linemen as it is.
Now you want
to bring another rookie in. I mean, from a numbers game, Eddie, do you really think that that's the best direction to go? That's the only thing I'm throwing out there to count.
Absolutely, because they don't have anybody on that roster that can stop the run. They were dead last year. They need somebody to stop the run. And you can say the same thing about guard. You've got the three guys I just mentioned. You still got Mosley and Herman from prior drafts, all guards. How many guards are they going to take if you get the kid from Iowa and you don't play him at tackle? You got to play him at guard. That's six guys that are going for guard. You can say the same thing.
Well, but you then have versatile offensive linemen. Richburg, for example, he was drafted as a guard, and he wound up playing center. He wound up playing guard, too. So, I mean, I think you can use guys in a variety of different positions.
And they got that guy last year in free agency, so they were going to use him.
Here's the only thing I would say to you, okay? In terms of guys who have proven that they can do things, there are more proven guys with a better resume on the defensive side of the line than there is on the offensive side of the line. You know, guys like Jerry and the other fellows you mentioned along that O-line, they're back of the depth chart guys. You know, I know John Jerry started last year, but I think he was brought back on a one-year deal to be a back of the depth chart guy, maybe an insurance policy to start if necessary. By most accounts, they need another starter in the offensive line. They don't need right now another starter on the defensive line. But, hey, you know what? Again, I appreciate what you're saying. The Giants did not stop the run last year. Tom Coughlin mentioned that as one of his top priorities. Now, if you were listening to the show earlier, I thought I outlined three or four reasons why I think they'll be a lot better against the run this year. If that's not enough for you, then you got to go out and draft a guy like Shelton. And I don't necessarily, you know, slam you for that. I don't agree, but I could see why you still want to improve that area of the team. I just think that there's enough of in-house improvement you're going to get that you won't need to make that move.
Well, second thing, I'm from North Carolina. Well, I live in North Carolina. I know all about the Panthers, John Beeson. If you get five games from this guy, that's a lot. So they better have somebody on the roster that's going to take his spot. I don't think McClain is the answer. He played last year. They were last against the run. I don't think anybody on this roster is going to play middle linebacker if something happens to Beeson. That second pick, number 40, you're going to have at least three or four good middle linebackers, the kid from Kendrick from UCLA, McKinney from Mississippi State, Dawson from TCU, the kid Perryman from Miami.
They need to
draft a middle linebacker that's going to help them against the run with that 40 pick.
I'm with you. There are several make-it middle linebackers in this draft in rounds 2 and 3. There are guys there who would be of value. So I think certainly you could take a look at them. I don't know I'd make a move there, because I also think that Devon Kennard could probably move in if they needed him to be the middle linebacker. I think he's got that much versatility and that much talent. I think you're shortchanging him if you think that automatically McClain's the guy. I think Kennard might be able to do it.
Look, I'm just going by the guys who were there last year. Now, they're talking about bringing Stevie Brown back as a safety. Why would you keep bringing guys back that you had last year when you were dead last against the run? That's the part that I just don't understand.
Stevie Brown's a safety, though. He's not a linebacker.
With new guys. I mean, this guy McClain, he was okay, but he's no middle linebacker. I'm sorry.
Well, look, the way I see it right now, McClain and Thomas are going to be starters on the outside. Beeson will be the starter on the inside. And as you say, there's a durability question. So McClain, to me, is your top number one backup coming off the bench to fill at any of the spots. But, hey, look.
I think they're in trouble, Paul. If that's the case, they're in trouble.
Well, and what have I said all along? You got to have a contingency plan for Beeson, because you cannot count on him for 16 given his injury history. I think you make a very fair point. I'm not disagreeing with you. What I am saying, though, is I think that they're a little bit better off in terms of plan B and plan C than you do. That's where we disagree.
Eddie, okay. Appreciate
now, two
the
quick things.
Real quick, Eddie.
There's a lot of calls. I'll let you guys go. Number one, I got a question. Do you think Petey is going to be here next year? Because by all indications he is, and if he's going to be here for 2 or 3 years, why are you picking an offensive lineman? Because he's not playing either tackle position because Pugh's not going anywhere unless you move him inside. And I still don't think that that's really what the Giants want to do again because they've got all these other guards.
Well, Eddie, we're going to have to let you go. Your phone's coming in and out, and appreciate the phone call. So thanks so much for weighing in here. His question was about Will Beatty in terms of the future of his position.
Signed through the 2017 season, Will Beatty, FYI.
I'm going to get back to the point that I've been saying for weeks. And, you know, Eddie, the last caller, is so caught up on if you draft a guy who's a tackle and you don't wind up playing him at tackle, you move him to guard, it's a waste. Do we have to go over the injuries, Paul, that have taken place over the course of the last few years with respect to the offensive line?
I got a better answer for you. When it comes to the offensive line, you play the five best guys.
Absolutely. You find the spot to get them on the field.
Okay? It's play the five best guys because guards a lot of times can play center. Tackles a lot of times can play guard. Play the five best guys. Give me five guys who you feel comfortable with, lining up with, guys who you know are going to go out there and they're going to push some butt, and they're going to get guys out of the way. They're going to protect your quarterback. Give me five guys who are going to get the job done, and I'll worry about what position to put them in.
Well, and I'll give another example, which is prevalent because it's right in the division. The Dallas Cowboys last year drafted Zach Martin. He played tackle at Notre Dame. They needed to find the spot for him because they already had two tackles.
Right.
They put him at guard. He was a Pro Bowl-esque type of a player this
right.
season. So, you know, you may not necessarily have a spot for a guy at tackle, but you slide him in at guard, and he could very well pan out to be a Pro Bowler. You're going to complain from that perspective?
See, that's the difference between offensive and defensive lines. You see, on a defensive line, usually a guy's a defensive end, or he's a nose tackle, or he's a defensive tackle. There's not as much flexibility
that's
moving
fair.
Those guys inside and outside as there is on the offensive line. Remember, guards a lot of times play center, tackles a lot of time play guard. Okay? Not as much mobility on the defensive side of the line.
Speaking of the defensive line, just for the sake of the last point about how maybe the Giants want to go in the direction of a defensive end and a defensive tackle, if you and I were to play the game of speculation, Paul, the four starters right now, and obviously we're away from position battles and so forth, I would say a defensive end, JPP.
Right.
Robert Ayers. I'm going to go on the opposite end.
Ayers could be more, could be Selvey, but let's go for Ayers,
Ayers
right now.
In the defensive tackle spots, I'm going with Ellis and Hankins.
Correct.
And
that's
then
how I see it.
So that leaves you got Jenkins as a backup. You have George Selvey as a backup. You have DeMondre Moore as a backup. We already are at the point where we've named 7 or 8 defensive linemen. And you said you're only keeping 9 or 10. Right?
9 max, I think.
So my question then to Eddie and the rest of the
And by the way, you're forgetting
Kerry
Wynn.
Kerry Wynn,
who
too.
Had a really good December last year.
So there we go. We're at 9 now. We're at 9 with those guys. Now, are you going to say, as it stands right now, a guy you bring in is going to jump ahead of that group of 9? That's the question I think that you have to ask.
If
though.
You're drafting
a top 10
defensive lineman,
upside.
He's going to be better than at least half of those guys.
I would agree.
And you make room for him, but this goes back to that component that Jerry Reese always talks about, you know, best player available. But, yes, when a bunch of guys are closely graded, the need factor does come into play. And are any of these defensive linemen outside of Leonard Williams, who's going to be gone in the top 3, I think, are any of the other defensive linemen, interior or otherwise, so far above the rest of them that you would say, oh, we've got to get that guy? I don't think so.
Appreciate you joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're going to give you 2 hours of programming, so we're now into hour number 2. We're continuing our mock draft. 4 players off the board, Jameis Winston, Leonard Williams, Dante Fowler, and then Amari Cooper. So the Redskins at number 5 are up. In case you're just joining us, we're going all the way through 9. So somebody's going to be able to make the Giants pick at number 9 here on our mock draft on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Russell is in Texas. Russell, what's happening?
What's going on, Beasley? The linebacker from Clemson.
All right. Vic Beasley, number five. Perfect. And I got to give you credit, Russell. We went to you. You were decisive. You were on point. That's the type of GM I like to hear from.
You ran the card right up to
there
the commissioner.
There was no hesitation.
What yeah, else? So I'm going to think like a GM, and I'm going to let Giants fans know. For the 1,000 and the last time, offensive line, you have a franchise quarterback been wasting his years. We need to run the ball. Run the ball. Why are y'all talking about all this? Listen, we don't need no Mari Cooper. We don't need Cooper. We got the wide receivers. You get the offensive line, Sherm, Flowers, any one of them, you get time for Victor Cruz to get back together. You give him time. You give Odell Beckham time. Because, you know, Odell Beckham is his second year, and that's where it gets hard. Not the first year. Now it's the second year. You know they're going to be looking at Odell Beckham Jr. So you know players, they're going to be all right, whatever, you know, he's a star. You get an offensive line, you run the ball. You do a couple of play actions. You give Eli time in the pocket. Why people don't see that? That's what the Cowboys did last year, and that's why Mahomes had an MVP season. Well, I mean, I don't get it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. May I ask, because, you know, I get criticized for being a real old-school guy around here, and it's self-professed. I have no problem with that. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to me that the offensive line is the foundation of your team, that you always build in the trenches. Are you a younger fella or an older fella, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 34. This is Russell from Fort Knox. I'm 34 years old, and then, you know, I just look at football. You always got to have an offensive line. You got to have it.
You know what, though, Russell? But you know what? I find a lot of the younger crowd, and I don't know if it's a demographic thing or not. Maybe it's the ESPN highlights and the sports centers that everybody wants skill position guys all the time in the first round, and they don't want to draft the core of what football is all about, and that is you got to have the big horses up front. And you know that, and you get that. And obviously at age 34, you seem to have a better grasp on that than a lot of other people do, because they get so attracted to those skill position players. And, you know, they can't do their jobs if you don't win the line of scrimmage.
Thank you. So this is what I have to say about the whole situation, Paul, because I've been agreeing with you the whole time. I said this on Twitter. I think I hit Lance Lutter up. I said, no offensive line, no playoffs. Great offensive line, playoffs. Look at the Cowboys.
Yeah. It's
a chance to go to the playoffs next year. The NFC East is up for grabs. The Cowboys are a mess. The Redskins, they got identity issues. RG3 or not. And the Eagles, I don't want to go to the Eagles. I'm laughing at what Chip Kelly's doing. He's building the Oregon Ducks at the Eagles, so that's going to take time. The Giants get an offensive line. There's a good chance they're going to make the playoffs. You get Amari Cooper. Yeah, you're going to make some highlights, but you're going to be 7-9, 6-10 next year. Because defense can't stop everybody. People are going to score on the Giants. You need an offensive line to slow the game down. So the defense won't get out there and won't get tired. Duh! I don't get it, man. Everybody, Amari Cooper, White, no offensive line. We need a protect Eli Manning. That's
you know,
more of a story.
Russell, thank you so much for your call. And you know what? The next time somebody starts crying about a skill position guy, and I know they took a wide receiver last year, and he was an all-world player, and I appreciate that. And the value was he was a top-five guy who dropped to the 12th pick. And in those cases, I understand why, okay? But generally speaking, it's not about making the top 10 highlights every night. It's about getting 10 wins at the end of the season.
Absolutely. And helping you get to those 10 wins is protecting your quarterback and running the football. Those are obviously two important facets. I was looking over the 2014 NFL draft while you and Russ were making the point about the importance of the offensive line. In the first 19 picks, you had 5 offensive linemen taken within those picks, just to put into perspective perhaps what may come to fruition throughout the course of this draft.
Now, there are not that many top 15 or top, well, there may be as many as 4 offensive linemen in the top 20. This year, potentially. Depends on where you grade Pete and where you grade Flowers. But, you know, the thing about it is, folks, and I keep getting up on my soapbox. I'm not going to do that right here. But what I will say is this. You've watched teams time and time again fall short of the mark when they didn't build in the trenches. And you say to yourself, well, why is the quarterback constantly under duress? Why is the quarterback getting sacked? Why is the quarterback hurt? Why on third and two is our running back losing 3 yards? Well, you know what? It's really about the line. It's not about the terrible play call. It's not about the running back who didn't find the hole. It's about the two defenders who are wrapped around his ankle in the backfield because nobody blocked for him. You know? That's what it's about, Lance.
So I will say this, just to bring the conversation back to the Giants. And somebody asked me this question on Twitter a few days ago, and I did respond about the Giants, if they were to draft an offensive lineman in round one, what type of strides or, you know, where would they maybe rank in terms of the run and the pass? One thing that I think is overlooked, I was looking over the numbers in terms of where the offensive lines, just in the NFC East, ranked last season. If you look at, in terms of pass protection, and one of the key statistics to look at in terms of pass protection is how many sacks your offensive line surrendered. The
pressures,
Giants,
quarterback hits, sacks.
I didn't necessarily go that far, but I stuck to just sacks.
And they were decent.
They were more than decent. The Giants and the Cowboys were actually tied for first in the division in terms of the least amount of sacks. Now, I'm not saying the number jumps off the page. They both gave up 30. But I think to most fans, Paul, if you were to ask where did the Giants' offensive line rank in terms of pass protection, they probably would assume it would be much lower. But if you look at the numbers, yeah, the Giants and the Cowboys tied for first. And the Cowboys were crowned as one of the best offensive lines in the NFL last season.
Yeah, the Giants were much better in pass protection than they were in run blocking, without question. Yeah. Look, they were good enough in pass protection that with the scheme Eli ran, getting
rid of
the ball.
Rid of the football.
Okay.
Yeah.
In conjunction with that, Eli Manning, in my mind, had a Pro Bowl season. I know he didn't go to Hawaii, but he deserved to. He had one of the best three or four seasons of his career. That's not the reason the Giants failed to make the playoffs. It was the running game. You know, the running game and their failure to stop the run. I mean,
needing the balance.
Anyway.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Our mock draft continues. The Jets are up at number 6. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Paul.
How are you doing, Derek?
who came off the board last?
Last was Vic Beasley, went to the Redskins at number 5.
That was a good pick.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Brandon Scherr. The Jets is a running team, and they're looking for probably a powerful run blocker. And that's what Brandon Scherr fears, the run blocker.
Now, so, I should note, Derek, that Dottino may not want to talk to you during the rest of this phone call, now that you've taken Brandon Scherr off the board. But I'm just warning you. I'm not saying it's a bad pick. You may not get a lot out of Paul's mouth, which may be a good thing for this program, too. But anyway.
You got him going to the wrong New York team. I would just say this to you, my one quick comment before we let you continue, is that I would think the Jets could certainly use a pass-rushing specialist to go with that stout run defensive line and that really good secondary. I think if they got a really ferocious pass rusher, a guy who could command a double team, that would make that defense really, really good.
See, Derek, he's trying to sell you to reconsider the pick.
What I was thinking is that Geno Smith, they're going to give Geno Smith another shot, but they do want to run the ball. And
yeah.
So I think what they may come back and even get another runner, another running back in the second round. So what a talented crew back there at running back.
It's not out of the question.
So what I wanted to ask is, at 9, Brandon Scherff is off the board, and on the Giants.
Thanks to you.
The Giants war board, the best player available when they pick at 9 is, let's say, Devontae Parker. Do they pick Devontae Parker if Eric Flowers is still on the board?
Well, if you go based on the Giants' philosophy, you're saying that best player available here. Is that what you're laying out? So, meaning the Giants.
I'm saying if you had actually took a peek at the Giants' war board,
right?
Okay.
And war room, and you saw that Devontae Parker was the next available, next best player on the board. When the Giants got to 9, and Eric Flowers maybe by 2 or 3 picks below that, do they take Devontae Parker?
Okay, now see, you just added a clause in there which makes the entire question a different question. If he's the next best player on the board and there's a significant drop to Eric Flowers and the rest of the cluster, now the Giants' MO is they would take Parker.
How many
but
significant?
If they're
one,
in the cluster,
two?
How many significant? 5.
Okay, so let's say he's two or three spots away.
If he's two or three spots away, now he's in the cluster. And now the need component does factor in. Once you if you don't break that player out of the cluster, the need component does take effect. And if he's only going to be two or three spots away, well, now he's in the cluster. So you could make a very strong argument there that you still go offensive line, whether it's Flowers or Collins or Pete or whoever you think the next best O lineman is. If that O lineman is in that cluster just two spots behind Parker on the board, I think the strong argument is going to be O line.
Okay. I just want to know what your son was about, whether you think the Giants just hands in a card and say the best available player. Because, I mean, personally, I don't think it's that simple. As the GM say, we're just going to take the best available player. I do think that they're going to take the best available player based on their needs.
Well,
and
I don't
think
it's
a whole different,
I think you must, again, please understand the need component factors in. If you're talking about a guy who's in the cluster, Beckham was top five on their board, and they picked at 12. That's a seven-player difference.
I'm taking,
so they had to take
it. Let's go back to JPP. JPP probably wasn't a need at the moment, but he was the best available player.
By
so
far.
I can see that argument totally.
JPP, you know, again, had a lot of –
the best available player.
They said that based on potential and athleticism, JPP had a wide range, and he's sitting there, and they're like, you know what? And that's what happens. That's why I really asked you to qualify. Is the guy the next best player on the board, or is he just the next best guy, but is he part of the cluster? That's the question you really need to ask. Because if Parker is like five or six spots ahead of the cluster, then chances are they probably take him. I don't think that would happen, by the way, because I don't think Parker is that much higher rated than anybody else who's going to be there at nine. That's just my opinion, because I don't think he's the ninth best player in this draft.
But the point is that if players are close to one another on the board, it
need
makes it that
play
much more difficult, as opposed to if you have one guy ranked 12 on your board,
no
another
doubt
guy ranked 20th.
No
I
doubt
think there's enough distance to getting back to your question, Derek, where, you know, maybe you say to yourself, well, the 12 guy, we value him much higher than the 20th guy. If we're talking 12 and 15, I think you have a little bit more substance to debate there.
Thank you.
Okay. And the last thing is that in the second round, position-wise, where do you think we go? And I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, Derek, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Here's the only thing I would say. Based on the value that's in the draft in the top three rounds, okay, which is where we're going to start the conversation, we're always going to start it with value. Where's the fertile ground in the draft? It doesn't pay to talk about the barren areas of the draft or the areas like quarterback where you're not going to go. Let's talk about the fertile areas of the draft. In the top three rounds, there are a number of make-it-grade offensive linemen and make-it-grade corners, safeties, of which the Giants need. Okay? It just so happens that their need fits the fertile ground in this year's draft. Okay? For make-it players. We're not talking superstars, all number one picks. We're talking about make-it players in the top three rounds. So, to me, I would be disappointed personally, and this has nothing to do with what's going on upstairs, if the Giants didn't get at least one offensive lineman and at least one guy in the secondary, whether it's a corner or a safety or a corner that converts to safety, in the top three rounds of the draft, because the draft is fertile in those areas. So the need fits the value. You're not reaching here, Lance, if you take guys from those positions in the top three rounds.
I would agree with you. I think that the offensive line and safety slash corner, depending on whether or not you can convert that player, or it's a corner that you think is going to be a legitimate starter for you potentially this year or down the road, would probably be the positions that I would target. And we've heard from a number of the experts that we've had on this program, they project a few of those safeties, maybe after we're talking about Landon Collins, to start going in the upper tier of the second round and then following through into the third round. For example, Randall out of Arizona State is just a name I'm throwing out. No necessary connection
right
to the Giants. He could be that free safety where, hey, the Giants say to themselves, good value, need, it meets, let's try to grab him as a hypothetical type of situation.
And, I mean, just to give you the antithesis of that, okay, the Giants have a receiving hands tight end in Larry Donnell. They don't have a physical stud dominating inline blocking tight end right now. But you know what? There aren't really any of those guys in the top three rounds of this draft because most of the guys who are coming out of school right now as a tight end, they're more pass-catching tight ends. So their need for that kind of fits getting someone of that ilk in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, or maybe even as an undrafted free agent. Brian Vogler of Alabama is a guy I've talked about quite a bit as potentially fitting that role, and you could likely get him in the seventh round. You see, so that's not a reach, that's not a push, that's trying to match the value and the fertility of the draft with your need at the appropriate level.
Well, and Paul, I think it's fair to say once you get out of round one, you always want good value, but I don't think you're reaching as much if you also look to address a need too, as you get later on into the draft.
Yeah, it's often been said that when you get past the fifth, when you're going sixth and seventh rounds, you know, you're really looking for guys who can either flat out just help you on specials because, hey, who's going to turn down a good special teams guy? You can always use one of those guys. So he's going to be a back end of the depth chart guy anyway, so he's going to have to play specials. So the guys in the last couple of rounds are either going to be special teams dynamos or you're just taking a flyer on them because you say, hey, we kind of need this position. This guy looks like he's got skills. We think he's got a chance to beat out a guy at the back end of our roster. And that right there, you're either taking a shot at a terrific athlete or you're taking a shot at a position that you just think he may have a chance to make it. But the balance between value and need gets very blurred at the back end of the draft.
Because sometimes it's so closely aligned or you have at least some type of a debate going on in terms of the war room. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mike is in Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Mike. How about yourself?
Yes. Okay, I'm fine.
You got the Bears on the clock.
What happened?
You got the Bears on the clock.
Who you want to pick for the Bears at number 7 in the draft?
Number 7, I probably Shane Ray. I mean, he's off the
Shane Ray's available. If you want to grab him, he is available.
Yeah, Shane Ray.
Okay.
But for the Giant, he has to be on Brandon Sheriff. I mean, that's the guy right there. That's the guy. I mean, I've been talking for the past 2 months, and that's what we want right
well,
now.
Well, Paul's been talking him for 3 years, so you got to play catch up
long
with Paul. So.
That's my guy right there. I mean, that's what we need. We need the running game. We need to slow the game down. We need Eli upright, not laying down supine. And I mean, like Eli is 34 years old. We need him on, healthy. Look at the Cowboys. Look what they did to number 9, Romo. We need Eli to have a little bit more time to throw the ball. We need the running game. We already got. People saying about wide receiver. We don't need the wide receiver. We got plenty of wide receiver. I mean, we got running back. We got everything. The only thing we need right now is Shell. That's what we need. That's all we need right now. I mean, that's what I've been targeting. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, and the reason why Sheriff is attractive, as Paul and many others have voiced like yourself, he fits the mold of a very physical, tough run blocker. You know, that's
this
what
is,
one
is,
of his toughest
This is the New York Giant, the big blue red crew. That's what we need. I mean, we need the running game. We need Eli to throw the ball. We need Eli to have more time to throw the ball. And then we're going to have a more specific game. But I mean, we don't need no wide receiver. We don't need no Amari Cooper. We don't need no Todd Gurley. We don't need that. We already got all that.
Well, Mike, appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for weighing in. And I think a lot of people would agree. You want to be that tough-minded team on the ground where you can pound the football.
You know, there are two kinds of offensive linemen. There are the technicians, and then there are the guys who are the scrappers, the maulers, the bullies. And Sheriff fits the latter category. And he happens to be an outstanding technician, but he's a mauler. And he's a bruiser. And, you know, my preference has always been here, ever since I'm 33 years now covering the Giants, my preference has always been to get those kinds of guys. I think you're better off when you have the Maulers playing offensive line than the technicians. It's not that technicians can't work. Heck, Lomitas Brown was a technician when he played left tackle for the team that went to the Super Bowl at the end of the 2000 season. You can do it. Will Beatty is more of a technician than he is a Mauler. He had a good season last year. You know, I get the fact that there's a difference, but if you have an opportunity to get a really high-quality offensive lineman who also happens to be of the Mauler variety, now that, to me, that's just five stars, man. You're shooting off fireworks. You know, that's really the perfect scenario. And that's, I just want to stress that, folks, because there are differences in linemen, and not every one of them is like Chris Snee and Richie Seibert. You know, guys who are pit bulls who will just scrap and scrap and scrap, and they're as tough as nails. You know, they'll eat nuts and bolts for breakfast. That's the kind of guy Sheriff is.
We have some people weighing in on Twitter. I don't want to forget about everybody who's not necessarily near a phone. Hashtag Giants Chat. Keep sending in the tweets on the topic of Brandon Sheriff. Jay Smith, JU Blue 1, says, we are in the final phase of our rebuilding of the offensive line, missing one piece and depth. Sheriff looks the part. He also goes on to say, Brandon Sheriff is my pick at number 9. Now, related to that, Saul Torres, who weighs in on the same tweet, at L Killer, you are okay with a guard at 9, he questions. So this is the big debate about where Brandon Sheriff fits in on the NFL level. But let's go back to the 2014 NFL draft, because I think a lot of people don't look back at the archives. And there has been a trend, Paul, where there have been tackles taken and they actually wind up playing guard. Case in point, the number 2 overall selection last year by the St. Louis Rams was a guy by the name of Greg Robinson. Greg Robinson coming out of Auburn was a tackle. Guess what? Greg Robinson played some guard last year, if you go back to his breakdown. So the number 2 overall pick of 2014, and you can have your opinions on Greg Robinson, and I'm sure we're going to get some feedback, and you can't judge a rookie after 1 year. So I'm going to shut the door on that debate. But the number 2 overall pick last year played some guard. It's happened with early picks. It's happened with later picks. We have to stop getting so caught up that a tackle by trade has to be a tackle year one in the NFL.
All right. Let me ask you to project just a little bit. He's going to be a rookie. He's never played a snap in the NFL. But do you think that there's a good chance that Brandon Sheriff would be one of the Giants' 5 best offensive linemen week one if they put them out on the field against the Dallas Cowboys?
I think he has a legitimate shot to be a starter, absolutely. In terms of the layout of the offensive line, well, you figure
it goes back to what I said to you before.
Yeah.
You put your best 5 on the field.
Correct.
Is he going to be one of the best 5 offensive linemen on this roster if he gets drafted?
Come week one?
Do you think that? I think the odds are good.
I think the odds are good. With that being said, I'm more of the feeling at some point in year one, he's going to be on the field.
Well, I think he starts week one.
Well, but here's what I'm going to throw out. And I brought this up on another feature on Giants.com. And I'm curious your thoughts. Keep in mind, when they drafted Justin Pugh, and I'm not talking about that they were the exact 9 overall picks, but Pugh was a high pick. Pugh, remember, if Deal doesn't get hurt, does Justin Pugh start week one, Paul? That's my question to you.
No, Deal had actually had a good enough training camp where he probably would have held him off, unless the Giants had felt that Deal was doing so well and that Pugh was going to have to move positions to try to beat out somebody else. But at that particular moment in time, you remember, Deal got hurt.
Correct. He got the finger injury.
And it was like, okay, well, now he's, you know, Pugh's got to be the guy.
He's got to be the guy. Okay, here's another one. Once again, second round pick, not a first round pick, so maybe you can't draw a comparison. If Jeff Schwartz doesn't get hurt in the preseason last year, does Weston Richburg find a way into the starting 5?
He's probably competing with J.D. Walton at center instead of being moved to guard, and that would have been a battle during the course of the preseason to see who wins. Would he have won? I don't know if the rookie at that point would have beaten out the veteran at the very beginning of the season, but Walton, as you know, had an up-and-down year, and at some point during the year, I bet you Richburg would have taken that spot. But he was needed at guard, so he went to guard.
Correct, and that's why it brings me back to my point, which you just said. At some point in year one, he was going to be on the field. So let's say, hypothetically, Sheriff is taken. I understand the urge to automatically get a top 10 pick into the starting 5, and I think there's more than a good chance that happens. I would not be surprised, though, if maybe Week 5 is the week where he takes over a starting job. That's all I'm saying, based on the track record that we've seen take place over the last few years.
Understood, but I'm saying if they're picking him at 9, the conviction is there that he's going to be starting Week 1. And that's just my opinion.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Let's hear the opinions of our viewers and our callers. We are up to pick number 8. We are nearing the Giants selection. Atlanta at number 8. Armando is in Florida. Armando, what's happening?
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
Doing well, Armando. What's happening with you?
I'm doing good. So who do you guys have in the lineup right now for the mock draft?
We have, this is the list. We've got Jameis Winston, number 1, to the Bucs. Leonard Williams, number 2, to Tennessee. Jacksonville took Dante Fowler at 3. 4 was the Raiders, Amari Cooper. 5 was the Redskins, Vic Beasley. The Jets at 6, Brandon Scherff. And 7 with the Bears was Shane Ray.
So right now, I just want to let you know, in case you're thinking about this, Kevin White's still out there. Mariota is still out there.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, these guys were like guaranteed top tens, right?
Correct.
Yeah, but Atlanta, I'm thinking Randy Gregory just because they don't have no pass rushers at all.
Okay. I could see the fit.
Shane Ray and Randy Gregory in back-to-back selections. That is creativity. Who knows? Hey, it could happen. I'm just saying it's the unexpected when it comes to these mock drafts.
Yeah, because I know Atlanta has quite a few wide receivers, and they're not going to give up Matt Ryan. So,
well, I would agree with you. I think, not to cut you off, Armando, we'll let you continue. Atlanta needs help in the pass rush department. So based on
without
need,
a doubt.
I don't think you're stretching it by any means of the imagination there.
And there's value there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I know Kevin White wouldn't fall to us. I'm thinking I would prefer Brandon Scherff over any of these guys, but
well, you know where the man to my right stands as well. So you're not on an island, Armando, in that department. But continue.
And I was going to ask Tony about information on Jared Hollingman. If he got information on that for the maybe a third round safety.
We heard about Hollingman from one of the writers who we had on recently. I forget what paper he was from, but he had covered the team on his beat, and he had said to us that that he thought the other Louisville safety was a better player than Hollingman was. He'd like James Sample a heck of a lot more than Hollingman, and yeah, he said that Hollingman put up the big interception numbers, and that was about it. He basically said in terms of being an all-around player, run support, tackling skills, hitting skills, all the other things that safeties have to do, he thought Sample was a much better prospect than Hollingman was. That, you know, the interceptions stick off the page, obviously, because the stat is just like, wow, you look at the picks, double digits in picks. But his thought was, hey, I've watched this guy, and that's really what he is. He's like a one-dimensional kind of player.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so
just
much.
One more thing,
yeah,
Lance.
Real quick.
I wanted to say to Lance, there was one time where it was you and John were talking, and you guys were debating whether it was a bike or whether it was a lawnmower. You guys were waking me up, and it was me getting pulled over by a cop bike.
Oh, boy.
So,
wow. Well, listen, did it work out okay, Armando?
No, it was fine. It was just kind of funny because I looked at the video when I went on lunch on my break. And
I got you. I do
fun.
Remember that show. We were wondering what that sound was in the background. So now at least you've clarified the mystery. I'm sorry to hear that it involved the authorities. I hope all is well, and I hope that you took care of business. But I'm glad that you at least followed up on that, and you're a dedicated viewer and listener. So we certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, it's no problem, man. Take care.
You got it, Armando. Take
care.
It easy. Yes, we had a phone call, and he was on the line, and we had this loud noise in the background. We didn't know what it was. Motorcycle, a car, he was mowing the lawn or something. So now we know there was
a
running with the law, correct. Okay. So there you go. We clarified that. Let's head back to the phone lines, and maybe Frank in Tampa is going to be really excited because, Paul, we are up to number 9. We are up to the Giants. Now, as you mentioned, Marcus Mariota is still out there. Kevin White is still out there.
Dupree is out there.
Frank and Tampa's old school, so this is going to be some interesting type of debating going on here. What's happening, Frank?
Hey, guys, before I make my pick, can I ask a couple of questions here?
Oh, so you want to build up the drama to the pick, Frank? You're going to leave us like this?
Well, he's looking at his 15 minutes on the clock. That's what he's looking at. You don't have 15 minutes, Frank. We're going to give you four. How about that?
All right, Frank, give us what else you got, and then we'll finally get around to the pick, the inconvenience of the selection. Yes.
Great, because once I make it, I'm sure I won't get another word in. So,
I'm concerned
about the line, no matter what, and I'll tell you why. Richburg was an integral part of that horrible blocking line last year. I know he's more a center than a guard, but at 290-something pounds, I don't see how him going to center is suddenly going to take him from, you know, the what house to the, you know, outhouse to the penthouse. I don't understand how we're going to expect him to suddenly be the anchor of this great blocking line when he wasn't last year.
All right, you got to give me a couple of seconds now. You got to give me a couple of seconds. First of all, he's going to go back to his natural position, which is where he belongs. That's first. Right. Second of all, he's now maturing. It's in his second NFL season, so he's going to be a lot better in terms of his mental recognition as to what the Giants want him to do. And in addition to that, physically, you have to believe his body's going to mature and fill out. He'll be stronger and more powerful. And so that's a good thing. And then the other part to this, too, and don't take this and throw it away. He was playing next to J.D. Walton, who's an undersized center to begin with. Okay, so what you basically had there was you're telling me you believe that Richburg was undersized at a guard. You got Beatty, who was more of a technique or technician at left tackle. He's not a mauler. Richburg, undersized. Now he's got on his other side, he's got his center, J.D. Walton, who, again, was a technician and not a mauler. So you're telling me you thought that was a muscle problem there. There was a power problem. Well, think about what's going to happen now, okay? If the Giants get more out of Richburg, like we think there'll be improvements across the board with him, he's now the center, okay? Now, who are you going to have on his right side? Schwartz, you think, is going to be the right guard. He's a more of a mauler. He's not a technician guy. So that's going to help out your center because he's a mauler. On the left guard, you may wind up having the draft pick, whoever that turns out to be, Collins or Sheriff, whoever it turns out to be. If it's one of those two guys, they're maulers. If it's not one of those two guys, it's going to be Pugh, who's more of a technician, I grant you. But he has also gotten much broader in the shoulders, much more solid, much more physical. He's gotten stronger like the Giants wanted him to. That is also going to help alleviate some of your concerns. At least I believe.
Right. No, I hope so. Yeah, no, I certainly hope so.
I mean, I had to answer you. You had questions. I had to answer you.
Right, but I am concerned with the fact that in the year, you know, 2015, we've got two sub 300-pound centers. It just doesn't seem, you know, make a lot of sense to me. But also, I'm concerned if we do draft the left tackle, you know, especially in the first round. I mean, Beatty, to me, is, and in fact, I think, Paul, you just agreed with me. He is not a mauler. So
no, he's a technician.
He is not ripe to me to be moved to the right side. So if we draft a left tackle, where is he going to play? I'm confused.
No, you don't draft a left tackle. You draft a right tackle. Typically in the pro game, the right tackle is the mauler, and the left tackle, if you're going to have a technician on the line, he's going to be the left tackle. And that's fine because that's where they've got Beatty. I'm not in favor of putting Beatty at right tackle. I've heard some people say that and say, well, the Giants draft a tackle, they should draft the left tackle, and Beatty should move to right. That is totally the opposite of football 101.
I agree completely, and that's why I'm wondering about it.
Don't listen to those people. Listen to old school.
If they want a tackle, then I'd prefer it to be a left tackle, but we're not ripe for that the way our line is set up. But here's my other thing before we get to the pick is that I'm concerned. Sheriff, you know, he's only played against college kids, obviously, right? So, you know, half the time, if not more, he's blocking 240-pound, you know,
pretty good conference, though.
Defensive ends.
Pretty good conference. Pretty good conference. There's a lot of power in that conference.
Yeah, Big Ten.
Yeah, but mostly undersized, 240-250-pound end. But here's where I'm concerned. You're saying he's a mauler, Paul, and by all intents and purposes, he's supposed to be. But I have to tell you, as someone, you know, who spent a lot of their life lifting weights, a 320-pound man who, I know he's not lazy, so he hopefully, you know, he's a workout warrior. But you can only bench 225 pounds, 23 times at 320 pounds when you're a dedicated workout warrior. There's something wrong, especially when you have short arms. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay.
I mean, that is poor.
This is where you can't just look at those combine numbers and say, okay, that's how the guy plays. You have to look at the tape, and you have to see the explosion coming off the line and how he gets his punch off the snap and basically how he also uses his leverage. Those are the kinds of things that give you the guy's overall power game. It's not necessarily how many weights or how many lifts he bench pressed at the combine. That's where it gets very dangerous. And we talked about that earlier in the program.
But it's a concern. Don't put a lot in that. It's a concern because that's pitiful for a 320-pound athlete.
But Frank, keep in mind, as Paul mentioned, you know, you're looking at the combine numbers. For all we know, outside of the combine, he may be able to bench press to your liking. I mean, we don't necessarily have all of that knowledge and all that intel out in front of us right now. I mean,
no,
teams
I agree.
May.
No, that's so that could point, change Lance, the conversation. And that's why I'm hoping that the Giants do, because I'd like to see what his leg press is. I'd like to see what his max bench is.
Let me just give you this.
You know, hopefully they're different because, you know, because that's a bad – but that, all I'm saying is that's frightening to me that a, quote, mauler at 320 with short arms – can only put that bar up 23.
I'll give you something real quick. I'll give you something real quick just by comparison. And again, I don't put a lot in that particular number. But just for your own satisfaction, Sheriff was listed at 23 on the bench. Leo Collins, 21 on the bench. And he's usually regarded as the other mauler along the offensive line. Pete did not do a bench. Flowers has 37. A lot of people are incredibly impressed with his power and his skill set. That's why he gets a lot of talk as potentially being a first-round pick. T.J. Clemens from Pitt, the other guy who a lot of people talk about as potential, 22 on the bench. Jake Fisher from Oregon, 25. D.J. Humphreys from Florida, he was 26. So, to be honest, 23 is not so horribly off the continent where you're going to say, boy, the guy's a weakling. But again, I don't even want to go there because that number is so irrelevant to me. I believe what I see on the tape, and the guy plays with power.
And what I also know, Frank, is...
I'm wrong. To me, it's just a concern.
What I also know, Frank, is that you're up at number 9. You can't take Brandon Sheriff, regardless of your concerns. So, you know, why don't we, you know, stop beating around the bush here, and let's up here, and let's hear who you got at number 9.
Yeah.
All right, you caught me off guard because I wasn't thinking I was going to be doing the Giants. But with the 9th pick in the 2015 NFL draft, the New York Football Giants select Marcus Mariota, quarterback, Oregon Ducks.
All right, no trade then, just straight up taking him.
Exactly, and I'm going to explain why, okay?
All right, I hope this is not a 25-minute dissertation. We may need to cut you off at one point.
Go ahead, real quick.
Yes, real quick.
Okay, Eli's in the last year of his contract, and he's going to want a fortune, okay? I don't believe that the Giants are one player away. I sadly, right now, don't think they're two players away. And so I think that anyone that they do draft, and especially with the guys that are off the board now, are not going to appreciably change their position in how they're going to finish next year or this coming year. So with that in mind, I take Mariota. He sits for a year. He learns under one of the best. Next year, we see how it goes. If Eli plays great, we use him for trade bait, and we should be able to get something great for him. If Eli doesn't play well, Mariota learns. He goes in and plays. We got him under a rookie contract. Hopefully he's a 10-year franchise quarterback under a rookie contract for the first 5. We use Eli's $20 million to sign 3 top-notch free agents next year, and we end up being a Super Bowl contender for the next half dozen years.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, Frank.
Have a great
day. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Real quickly, before we get to a few more calls, before we wrap up the program, on the topic of the bench press.
By the way,
the sheriff.
I'm speechless.
Yes. Oh, I figured. That's why there was no point in me asking for a counter.
Please continue.
I'm just moving on. Sonny Boy at Sonny Boy 2323, who certainly weighs in quite often here on the program, he brings up the point, all your power is in your legs, bench is for your punch and leverage. Just to add to the conversation when you evaluate offensive linemen and so forth.
There's no question that leg drive, quickness off the snap, the punch, the leverage, all of those things come into play. When you say a guy plays with power, all of those components have to mesh together. And that's why when some people say, well, this player is raw, or this player needs some work on his technique, it's all of those components that work in unison that make him a good power player. And if one or two of those things aren't right, like his hand placement, it's not just the punch, it's the placement of the hands. Then it's how do you use your weight and your leverage against the guy? Do you take that lineman into where he's running and push him out of the play? Or are you trying to hold him up or push him back or wall him off? There are all kinds of things that go into a guy playing with power. Many, many facets, many, many techniques. And a lot of times, Lance, that's what makes the difference between a first, a second, or even a third round pick, because guys will say he's got the skill set to do all of these things, but maybe he's in bad habits. Maybe he was never taught those techniques. So now it's up to your coaching staff to look at him and say, guess what? We can fix that punch. We can get his hand placement right. We can teach him how to play with leverage. And that's where the grades start to get very jumbled between teams, because some teams will say, look, the shorter arms, or the punch isn't there, or the hand placement's not there, the footwork isn't quite there. And then another team says, you know what? We could deal with that. We could fix that.
We'll make it work.
That, you know, we got the dent wizard here, you know, in the locker room. The dent wizard's going to go boom, 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 punch that right out, and all of a sudden the guy's pristine. And that's the difference a lot of times between a guy dropping a whole round, because teams don't necessarily know that they can work with the dent.
All right, we got two more calls. Let's try to bang these out before we wrap up the program. JD is in North Carolina. JD, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Not wrong, JD. What do you have for us?
Happy to have Steve. I guess if we're going to round out the top 10.
Sure.
From the Rams, I think I would go with Kevin White there. I think that's a pretty pretty big slam dunk
okay,
right
we'll
there for the Rams.
That past the Giants, Kevin White at number 10.
That Fair would be enough. The St. Louis Rams, by
Correct.
The way.
Correct.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So we've pretty much been going over the first round pick as much as you possibly could, I think. So I wanted to see what your guys' thoughts were as far as where the Giants stand with their depth right now. Which positions do you think are currently a strength with the depth, and which ones do you think are, you know, possibly could be upgraded in the draft? And you know, basically, overall, where do you think the Giants stand with their depth going into the 2015 season? Thanks, guys. I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, JD. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Very quickly, it's very simple. You know, as you look at it, the Giants have some depth needs around the roster, but it's really the offensive line. They need at least a starter, you would think. They would like to get a starting caliber guy in the secondary, and getting some help there depth-wise isn't a bad idea. Could they use another guy perhaps on the back of the depth chart at wide receiver, potentially, you know, with the Cruz injury? Could they potentially use a guy to compete at linebacker, potentially? Could they use a blocking tight end to compete at the back of the depth chart, potentially? I mean, look, the only thing I'm thinking is I don't think they need a running back. I don't think they need to draft a quarterback. I don't think they really need to draft a defensive end. I'm not sure if they even need to draft a defensive tackle.
We went over the numbers earlier.
You know, but other than that, I mean, as Jerry Reese says, you look to improve at every position you can.
Safety, certainly based on a numbers game, you would assume is a priority. I mean, on offense, as you alluded to, Paul, you know, you look at the running back depth chart, you look at the wide receiver depth chart right now, you've got substance there, especially with what they did in free agency and how some of the draft picks powered out. So, I mean, I think that's certainly a positive in terms of the makeup of the roster right now.
I would also like to say, based on the draft picks that you guys have taken today during the program and your mock draft, at number 10, I am taking Trey Waynes, cornerback, Michigan State. He is my guy based on who you left on the board for the Giants at number 9.
Well, I thought we were going to save something for tomorrow. You had to just, you know,
lay
it out
there.
Well,
no, because tomorrow I'm taking Sheriff.
Well, that's right. That should have been a no-brainer.
But since he was already taken earlier by the Jets in our mock draft.
You just wanted to adjust this one.
My second choice, if I have my way,
would have been
Trey Waynes. Which I've already had on Giants.com with Schmelk in our mock draft because he insisted also to take Sheriff off the board.
But in case they missed that, we needed to reemphasize it here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. So it was Winston number one all the way down to Marcus Mariota at number nine to the Giants. A very unique mock draft. We appreciate all the callers and the listeners and the viewers for weighing in on this mock draft. We will be back tomorrow. Paul and I will be on for 2 hours again, breaking down all that's happening. We will do our own mock draft. We'll tell you who we think is going to go leading up to the Giants. And Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, he'll join us as well.
You got it.
So a lot to look forward to. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you on Thursday. Have a good one.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.